Hello, and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. I'm John Godek, and with me today is James Case. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John.
So, James is a Pathfinder designer after previously having been Pathfinder Society organized play developer and editor for Paizo, where his first lead editing assignment and writing credits were in Gods and Magic. In addition, James has over a dozen Pathfinder 2nd Edition writing credits and several fiction credits that have been posted on the Paizo blog. So, James, can you tell us a little bit about your journey to becoming, you know, first a Pathfinder editor, then moving to developer, and now as a designer?
I came as an editor. Before I joined Paizo, I had previously worked in academic and scientific editing. And I did that for several years. I decided I wanted to try to get into gaming, and my skill set was in editing, so I looked around for where they might have editing jobs, and it turns out that was right when Paizo had started to hire. I did not know it at the time, but it was part of the big hiring wave that was spinning up for 2nd Edition, so I got to the office on my first day. I was in a staff meeting with nobody I had ever met before, and Eric was like, "You've signed your NDA, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Okay, so we're doing 2nd Edition. That's what that is." And I'm like, this makes sense now. Like, I understand why so many people are coming on right now.
So you started as an editor for scientific and academic things. So can you tell me, I'm kind of curious because I'm an academic, and I'm kind of curious what type of things you did, because I could really use an editor, and I didn't know I could get one.
I worked in Tokyo at a company that did various kinds of like scientific editing, and that could either be things that were originally written in Japanese, translated in-house, and then I would edit the translation, or they could be things that were written primarily in English, but by a non-native speaker, and almost all, you know, if you said you worked in academia, so almost all the publication is done in English. Mm-hmm. And I think only a third of it is done by native speakers. So there's, you know, there's a lot of people who do editing just to make sure that the concepts can be very technical, right? There's a very kind of structured language to all of it, and you're trying to make sure your argument gets across persuasively. So I did that mostly in biomedical and a bunch of other kind of weird things I picked up on the side. I had a bunch about linguistics. We did one where we translated a bunch of poetry for a business website. I had one very interesting thing on artifacts in one of the, you know, historical kind of artifact repositories where they would beam it with lasers to see kind of what the artifacts had been made out of so that they weren't, you know, scraping bits off of mirrors or whatever to scan. So that kind of thing.
Well, and you said you wanted to get into gaming. So were you gaming in Tokyo then?
Yeah. I, you know, I, like a lot of people, I came in on 3.5 D&D, did that. And then my group switched to Pathfinder during the playtest we came on. So I think when I had them look up to see if I already had an account, you know, when I linked my staff account in, they were like, "Well, you have this one thing here that's linked to this, like, high school or college email address that only has the playtest on it." And I was like, "Oh, right. I remember that." And then in Tokyo, yeah, I found a gaming group, and it was like one of the things when I moved to a new city, I was like, "Okay, well, I'm new here. I should try to find some, you know, groups to hang out with." And so I had a gaming group there, and we played a bunch of different games. I think we started on 4th edition, and then we played some Star Wars, and I was like, "Some Pathfinder," and we just kind of did a little bit of everything.
And so then you were starting, you wanted to get into gaming, and you saw Paizo had a bunch of openings that they were recruiting for, and you decided editing kind of fit in where you're at, or were you just saying, "I want to do something in gaming and I'll go anywhere," I guess?
Oh, I think my old boss, Judy Bauer, I understand this, but I was a little strategic about it. I was like, "Well, I'll get my foot in the door doing the thing that I have years of experience doing. And then, you know, once I do that for a while, I can try and get some credits and, you know, work my way to another department."
Seems like a lot of folks start in editing and then do move on to other departments at Paizo.
I think it sort of depends. I think editing is in some ways a more generalized skill set. I think that like there's a lot of stuff that's very, certainly very specific to game editing, but by and large, I think somebody who does editing at some place and can adapt to the style, you know, can come in on editing in a way that it's, you know, there's not quite as many places where the developer skill set can be transferred in from. It's like very specific. Right. You do so many different things. So I think it might just be a little more common that maybe people come in on editing and then shift around from there.
Right. And when you came in, you were editing primarily for second edition, or did you do Starfinder as well?
We were kind of taking some of the tail end of first edition, some of those like, I think I came in on one of the last ones of like War for the Crown or something. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, near the end of the line there. I did work a lot on Starfinder. I know that since in the editing department has tried to restructure itself a little bit to try and get people who are really specialized in Starfinder and specialized in Pathfinder, so there's not quite so much crossing of the streams. Mm-hmm. I know that it's very difficult to hold one system style in your head, let alone four, which I think is where we maxed out once, where we had first edition, the playtest, Starfinder, and one of the beginner boxes going at the same time. It was a little untenable.
And so how long were you an editor before you went over and started to get into the developer role?
I think about 2 years, because I was there through the playtest and then through the launch of second edition. And then I moved over to OP not long after that. So probably about 18 months to 2 years, somewhere in that vein right there.
And now when you were applying for developer, well, first of all, for editors, do they have an editor test like they do a developer test?
Oh, it is. It is a very strenuous test. Yes. there is. I think that there's so many different parts to editing that go on in an RPG book. There's some very narrative editing, you know, where you're kind of like a book editor. You're looking at plot lines and characters and that sort of thing. And then there's what is really, for all intents and purposes, technical editing, where, you know, you're looking at formatting of abilities and blocks, and you're trying to do all of that work to understand it so that you make it easier for the reader to just pick it up and be like, oh yeah, this is a fire sword. It does 20 damage, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's all sorts of other things kind of in between there, you know, looking at, decreasing bias in the language or that sort of thing that are also considerations. So the editing test had kind of a lot of different components on it, just because there's a lot to sort of test in it.
Yeah, I've talked to editors and I have forgotten about asking that question. I talked to, well, former editors, I guess, Liz Liddell quite a bit, and she told me all kinds of stuff about editing. I had no idea. So I'm following up a little bit more, because I should have been asking these questions from other people. So
Liz is a fantastic editor. I have learned a lot from her. So
yeah, and she really opened my eyes to a lot of stuff. I guess in part because as an academic, I actually do a ton of editing, and I didn't realize that was something that was transferable to the RPG industry in that regard. So I knew they had editors, but I didn't think about where they came from, you know? So you went from editing to the organized play team specifically for Pathfinder Society. Now, did you have the opportunity to apply for other develop positions, or did that one just open up and you thought, hey, this is great? How did that all happen?
It opened up. I really like the idea of working in a primarily digital environment. I know a lot of people really like the books and the having a bookcase full of books. And I was like, I want products that go from concept to publication in 2 months. That's what I want. I really like the fast turnaround of everything and how we could kind of do that, as opposed to, I mean, it's nice to have the physical book, but it also takes an additional, you know, 4 months to send and then to come back and then to distribute. So it just kind of makes everything stretch out a little longer.
Mm-hmm. Also, you have, I guess, less limitations in for the digital format in terms of, you know, like page count and word count and things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have to add an extra page, it's not a big deal. Whereas a hardcover, it's a huge deal.
Yeah, I think that that is in a vacuum true. The problem is that then you realize that you've ballooned your workload by a lot.
Right.
I was like, well, I a human still have to process all of this. Can't get too much bigger. And, you know, also it has to be enough adventure that people in organized play, they have very specific specifications and restrictions and that kind of thing. You know, you want it to be a one session adventure, right? So it has to be within a certain length, and it has a lot of very specific rules to facilitate that kind of open campaign. Anyone can drop in or out play style. So the OP has very tight technical specs, and I think it's really impressive sometimes how many they can like churn out and just have and be these cool one-shot adventures that you can drop in and play or, you know, string together in a campaign.
Now, did you come in during the first season, second season, or where did your time start with the org play?
I came in about halfway through the first season of second edition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I had edited like one or two P1 scenarios, but in terms of working on the line, it was kind of near the tail end of season one, and into season two is kind of where I feel like I did a little bit more of the things.
And were you then the developer who set up season two, or was that already done? You know, the overarching themes and stuff.
Michael Sayer had already kind of set up a lot of the overarching themes of it. There were some bits that were more keyed into the meta plot that, you know, we kind of have to lock down pretty early in the process. Those are kind of the big beats. And then there's smaller ones that kind of fit in between that can be a little more freeform. Mm-hmm. But I unfortunately didn't have the chance to sort of set the arc of the season or anything, but I really like what we were doing, and I got to do some of the smaller scenarios that I thought were just kind of fun because they could be a little freer and they could contrast kind of the big meta plot that was happening at the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you, I don't know the timing when you actually became a designer, how that fit with the development cycle, but you were there to develop season three then?
No, I think the last things that I worked on that were there, oh God, it feels like quite a lot of time. It was, I think the last things I worked on were about mid season two. I think they were the things that released in somewhere in the January, February area, because of course I transferred over in November, but in November, the things that we're working on, the things that come out, you know, later on. Mm-hmm. So about halfway through season two.
But you were there for the start of the bounties then, right?
Yeah. I think that was a thing that Mike had been wanting to get in, and I really like them because they're just very short, and there's kind of some concepts that are difficult to do from the perspective of having the adventurers, you know, organization in world send people on bounties.
Right.
When I did that, I was very happy to kind of just concept and throw out there was the quote unquote holiday special, the mm-hmm. bounty that Patrick Hurley did, which is mm-hmm. Witch's Winter Holiday, which is just like, you're just helping this witch put together like the season celebration in winter, which is like, why would you contract the Pathfinder Society to help this one witch put together a dinner? But it was just kind of a cute little thing. So I liked it a lot. Yeah.
So what was the driving force behind starting the bounties in the first place?
I think it really was that, first of all, it was the idea to get like a real drop-in product where you don't need to be quite as familiar with a seasonal meta plot or anything like mm-hmm. that. You really could just drop in and do it. Mm-hmm. And it was also, you know, it was not that long after we had launched second edition. So it was like, well, maybe some like level one, very casual, very short intro products might be good. And then the other part of that was to also open up the kinds of adventures you can tell to be exactly what I was just talking about. Those things that you don't need to have the, you know, global adventurer organization doing.
Mm-hmm. Now, your work as a developer, there's some overlap with editing in terms of you're reviewing what your freelancers are putting in and making changes, make sure they tie together. But then it's also got a whole lot of other stuff in that. So how would you, what would you consider the biggest contrast, I guess, between the two positions?
I think that when you're editing, most of the time, the goal is not to be generating new content. It's to be refining the existing content that's there. And when you're developing, you have a lot more of, you know, you're writing the outline that goes to the author who's writing it and who's contracted to write it. And you're really working with them to refine the product back and forth. So it feels a lot more like your goal there is to is a little bit earlier in the process to generate the content in the first place. And then also, you know, you do a certain amount of refinement and the editor picks it up from there and does a second layer of refinement. So I think it's that. And I think it's also the, there's a lot more project management almost in that you really do work with your author or authors over the course of the assignment. You work on the product. You're also working with the art team to get, you know, art illustrations and assets in on that front. You're also doing a lot more promotional things to get people interested in the product, get them to know what it is. You know, we do things like we put out promo blogs, and there was a time we were doing fiction to promote the blog because we were like, okay, well, these are the two adventures that are coming out now. So we want to get people thinking that, like, this time there's orcs and then there's also a school mystery. So those are the things that we're putting out there this month.
So the developers are working with the marketing folks as part of the, social media presence and the blog and everything.
I think it depends. I think that for organized play, certainly, because, you know, a large part of organized play is direct community management, right? And coordinating with them, I think that maybe we were just a little closer to the community on that, kind of on that front. And also just because the products came in so quickly that, you know, in a product like Secrets of Magic that we announced last year that just came out and that we've sort of on some level been promoting for a year, I think that there's a lot more time to sort of coordinate with everybody to get all of the, here's what's in the book, here's what's coming out, here's what's together. But, you know, we have, at the time, we had two Pathfinder scenarios, two Starfinder scenarios, and a bounty coming out every month. So it just kind of, it made a little bit more sense for us to just kind of be a little more involved in hyping the products, as it were.
Okay. And when you were a developer, what was your role relative to Linda's role?
My role was mostly to learn from Linda and Mike and everyone else. But for a while, I was taking one of the scenarios out of the month, or like the bounty and one of the other scenarios or some other miscellaneous tasks. And also Linda was a lot more involved in the kind of overall management of who was working on what and kind of those like really big picture things. Whereas I was a little more, cause I had just joined, I was a little more grinding out, you know, this scenario or taking care of these maps or picking up this, task here or there, that kind of thing.
I just kind of wonder, cause I've talked to all these people and hear what they're doing. And so now I'm talking to other people that have worked with them. And so I'm kind of curious how the inner gears are working. Now you've gone on to become a designer for Pathfinder. I've talked to Mark Seifter before, and he's kind of explained to me what it is, but I'm not quite sure I get that difference between the designer and the developer. Is it a rule set thing, or can you talk about that a little bit? And also why you decided to move from developer to designer?
It was sort of always my goal to eventually end up as a designer, and I kind of hopped my way through other tasks to get there. I think I've been a little transparent about that, but I always wanted to really work with the sort of inner clockwork of everything, which is, I think, kind of the main, much of the development team and the design team's role when it comes to being sort of the producer of the book has a lot of overlap. You know, we both assign the book, we both contact the authors and project manage, you know, any number of authors over a several month period to get the writing in and write art briefs and polish the text. I think that the kind of content that or generating is the thing that is a little bit more the separator. The design team, a lot of the times, are the ones who are kind of coming up with the new rules architecture for the overall kind of game engine, the system, as it were. Mm-hmm. And then we, for the most part, are not, generating narratives that take place within it, although that's some of the really cool stuff that, you know, the AP line does, or that the Pathfinder Society line does, or that sort of thing. But we more kind of create the tools in the space, and then, as opposed to taking them and like using them to flesh out the world and stuff the way Lost Omens does, or to tell stories the way that some of the other lines.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you've been in the designer position since December. That's correct. November, December.
I'm trying to remember how time works in the last year.
It's like
I'm going to say sure that sounds about right. Came in as we were about halfway through Secrets of Magic, so that makes sense. November, December.
Yeah, I remember seeing a posting. I thought December welcoming you to the design team. You've been there a while. Does this mean at the end of this year you're looking for another move, or is this it for you?
No, I'm quite happy where I am for the time being. It's great. I've worked on a lot of books. I have the thing that we are announcing at Gen Con, which I believe will be tomorrow after this recording, is the project I am leading, and I am very excited.
Oh, nice.
To have that be announced probably by Eric breathlessly tomorrow morning, if I have the timeline right. And see what people think of that. I've been working on that for the last several months. I have most of my content in. We have class design. I know we mentioned that we have a class playtest coming up, so that'll be coming up soon. So I'm very excited. So I'm staying put.
Oh man, I tell you, you mentioned that, and I realize that that's my first day of class, the first day of Gen Con. when he's doing all those announcements, I'll be in the classroom teaching. So I'm going to miss it. I'm going to have to hear about him after the fact. But now I'm really excited, though. So,
well, I'm sure you could look at your cell phone under your desk the way a student might.
No, that doesn't really work. I have a podium.
It would just
be on top of the podium then. I'll have to look. Maybe I'll just cut class. It's the first day, right? I can cut it short. That'll be okay.
You can show up, introduce yourself, put the syllable out. You'll have to go talk about fantasy games now.
That's it. Oh, yeah. That's kind of funny. It sounds like you've done a lot with the RPG industry in a relatively short time period, and you have like so many credits. How did the folks that I hear that you all get an opportunity to freelance pretty much as you want. It just seems like you have a tremendous, over a dozen in the short time you've been there. Like, and I think all of it's second edition too. Is that right?
I know that the wiki says that my first thing was Gods and Magic. I think I had one P1 credit. I did some Aphorite feats near the end of it. I think in Plane, might have been Plane Hopper's Handbook. So I think I have like one P1 credit and a little bit of Starfinder.
But that's like super prolific. How do you manage to do that in addition to all the work that you're doing for the company?
I'm certainly not Luis Loza or Ron Lundin. I swear Ron is like three people who just rotate out every day because I don't understand how his time work otherwise.
He doesn't sleep. That's it.
I have also considered that option. Yes. Robots was another one. I came into the industry as an editor and I knew nothing about it. I remember somebody saying you're working with Owen, and I was like, who's Owen? I don't know who Owen is. And now I'm like, oh yeah, Owen. Oh, it's great. Yeah. I was always cognizant of the fact that I was kind of coming in what I felt as a little late to the game. So I was just like, sure, I need to build a portfolio just the way I would in any other industry, and I want to get some credits. And also coming into second edition was a time when we were reiterating or updating or just frankly generating a ton of content. Like we put out so much in the first year, especially of second edition, because, you know, we needed to kind of get everything up and running. So there were a lot of opportunities for me to kind of throw myself on projects that I was excited about. And I'm certainly not the kind of person who's like trying to always have an active freelance. I have no freelance right now and it's great. but I think that it was a combination of really actively trying to build a portfolio in a short period of time. And also there just being a lot of things that I happen to be very passionate about writing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's still very impressive. And I can see, you know, why you've been able to move all the way to the designer position relatively short time from, you know, basically starting from zero, as you're talking about, to now doing this. That's just phenomenal. You know,
the other secret is that I did a lot of really small assignments here and there. Yeah. Like I've done one AP, and otherwise I've been like, yeah, I'll do three pages in this book or a bit here. So I think it maybe looks a little more prolific than it actually is.
It looks good. It looks, yeah, it doesn't list the page count or the word count. So, you know, it's kind of hard to tell on that. So what advice do you have for people interested in breaking into, you know, RPG writing or, you know, other work in addition or editing even for since you've been going, you know, that road to start with?
Yeah. I think a lot of this stuff is stuff you'll hear from anyone in the industry who asks that question. You know, it's above everything, just like this, we all make games and we write fantasy stories about shooting dragons with magic fire that comes out of your eyeballs. But like fundamentally, this is a job. And I think that the authors and other people in the industry who I wanted to have kind of an ongoing professional relationship with are the people who treat it professionally. You know, I've had authors who have been like, okay, I'm like, here are the specs. And they're like, okay, cool. Those are the specs. What about ABC? And I was like, AB is good. We can't do C because of reasons, you know, and they'll be like, okay, that's great. Cool. And then it feels like we're collaborating on that. And, you know, that's just kind of the baseline there, really. I would say that kind of in line with the it's a job is to, you know, I think that it's good to just kind of take projects, and certainly kind of the way that I did it is to just sort of take projects here and there just to kind of get your name out there, to build a portfolio. You know, the first thing you put out doesn't need to be your Game of Thrones length, you know, complete epic fantasy that, you know, does everything. You know, start with something manageable. It's good to have a smaller manageable product that's really polished and really shows your strengths than to try and do this kind of huge sweeping endeavor, I think, on your first swing. That's certainly a thing that a lot of people can maybe fall into. And then kind of the third thing is to also think of what your strengths are outside of just being a massive nerd, because we're all massive nerds. You know, we all fall somewhere on the nerd spectrum culture of like from Lord of the Rings to Star Wars to, you know, various animes to various board games thing. So we all have that in common. And that's like a really good thing to fall back on. But then it's also like, what do you have that stands out beyond that? That can be some kind of technical knowledge that you have. You know, I didn't know something about starships once, and we were trying to figure out what the thing on the starship should be. And it was like, this is a naval term, right? And I was like, I'm going to call my Navy friend. Mm-hmm. He called my Navy friend. And I was like, yo, what should this be called? And he's like, it should be called this. I was like, okay, thank you. That was knowledge I did not have. And now I have it. So thank you for that. And that can also be, you know, knowledge about particular like cultural sets or that kind of thing that you bring to the table, but it can really be anything. It's like, what do you have that makes you stand out from the next person who's, you know, can quote all of Lord of the Rings while standing on their head?
Now, I think that's a great point. And I've heard, John Compton's take on how you actually can tell a developer that, that you have something unusual like that. He has a very specific process. How would you suggest somebody? So, you know, if you were the organized play developer and somebody wants to write a scenario or a bounty, how can they convey to you that not only am I able to do this, not only do I know the system well enough, but I also bring this really, really cool stuff that maybe other people don't have?
I try to ask it in my, you know, in my first response email to somebody. But I realize that that means hope that the other person asks you a question, which isn't a great segue. I think that when you reach out to make contact or to introduce yourself or to exchange your business cards at a con, whenever that's a thing again, I think it helps to just say, hi, you know, my name is such and such. I was hoping I could talk to you a bit about wanting to write for you or wanting to write for this system. And I think you can just work very naturally into, you know, I have experience writing this kind of thing. I'm really interested in XYZ and passionate about doing that. I think that's something very easy to kind of get out in sentence three of a couple, you know, of a short email that you send to sort of introduce yourself. To say the thing where it's like, and I also happen to be really knowledgeable about, I don't know, 14th century sailing vessels or something. You know, and I volunteer at the 14th century sailing vessel museum, so I have a lot of exposure, you know, kind of just work it in like that, I would think. And then, because I know if I have a pirate adventure coming up, I'd be like, oh, I remember that person who was really into sailing vessels. I should float them to the top of the list for this one. So,
so speaking of these sorts of things, as a designer, do you assign freelancers still?
Oh, yeah. The process of the sort of project management of the book is very similar. So the project that I'm spearheading right now was the same thing. You know, I looked at how much sections I had to assign. I reached out to a number of authors who I thought would be a good fit for it. A certain percentage of them said yes, a certain percentage of them said no. You know, and from there, I kind of winnowed it down, assigned the sections, and then sent everybody their contracts. And that part is very similar to how it works as a developer. Although the difference for me was that in organized play and to an extent, the Adventure Path line as well, they tend to work with a very small number of authors who are writing either each entire project or who are writing like very large, significant chunks of it. So like in the Adventure Path line, somebody might write the entire adventure and half of the back matter. But then, you know, some other authors might write like one section of the back matter and or an article here, a monster there. Whereas for the Lost Omens books and the design books, it is unusual for, I don't know how one person would write an entire one of those. That's just so much book. We tend to subdivide those into sections. So the author count on the book can be much higher than in something like an AP.
All right. And the last question I have related to this is, I'm asking everybody at Paizo that I talk to just to get them on record. No, just to know, how frequently do you like freelancers to contact you? What's an appropriate amount?
It's difficult because the frequency of assignment for the designs is pretty infrequent. I think we have 3 book releases a year, right? So, and then of them, I'm not running all 3 books in the year because it takes a book over a year to make it from concept to release. And even after that, there's more. So I would say maybe once a quarter or something. And knowing that it's not once a quarter because I have a book once a quarter, it's once a quarter because that's a good time to hope that, you know, you're kind of to make sure that you're in somebody's file for if they have something coming up. And if they don't, there are a lot of times where I have an author approach me and saying, you know, like, hi, my schedule has opened up. I've just finished this other thing. I'm interested in writing. And I would say, well, I don't have anything right now, but I think Luis and Eleanor might be assigning something soon. And I might pass that name along or something. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what's next for you? What are you working on that you can actually talk about other than the thing that's being announced the day after this gets published?
Precious little. The main thing that I am working on that is not the secret project or the classic that's related to the secret project is Book of the Dead.
Okay.
Right now. We have that coming out next year, and that's in development. So I am working on a couple things in that. I know we've stated that there is an adventure in that book. So mm-hmm. I think as the one who has most recently kind of been in the thick adventure developing, that's one of my main projects right now, is going through it and making sure that Jason Bowman's adventure kills some of your characters, but maybe not all of your characters, but hopefully all of your, we'll see.
But, it is Book of the Dead after all. So
it is Book of the Dead. So that kind of thing. And then helping out here and there with just kind of the general, we have a pretty collaborative process. A lot of the time, you know, most things go through multiple passes from designers. If we hit a block or we just kind of need to talk something out, it's very common to just throw it into a chat and we, you know, and we talk it out. So that kind of thing. But I think Book of the Dead is the one that I can talk about right now. And then the other one is the class playtest that will be coming out shortly. So,
and so you, at Gen Con, then you'll be on panels talking about the super secret thing that's being announced then?
We have a panel for just kind of the upcoming designer projects coming out of the design team in general. So I will be on that one to talk. And I will also be on the panel talking about reaching out to diverse voices of the industry, which I believe both of those panels are on Friday, I think. I'm not sure what my Gen Con schedule is like.
Oh, I apologize. I don't have it handy either. We'll just say that you're going to be on those. And
yes, they are on the same day and they are right after each other. So
that'll be easy. That's very convenient. Well, James, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. It's been really great to have this chance to meet you and chat with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.